My guest at this time is Jessica Vaughn. She is Director of Policy Studies at the Center for Immigration Studies here in Washington. Over the past several days and really past couple of weeks, news outlets and folks on social media have focused a great deal of attention on some 1,500 illegal immigrant children who are reportedly unaccounted for. They've also condemned the Trump administration for separating parents and children when taken into custody for illegal border crossings. And are these developments new, or did the same things happen in prior administrations? We'll get to all of this in the next few minutes. And Jessica, thanks for being with us.
I'm glad to be with you.
All right. Well, let's start with this one. Why are kids and parents separated when they cross the border illegally together?
Well, there can be a number of different reasons why they would be separated. Sometimes it's because the person who is arriving illegally with the child is not the child's parent. The child maybe is being smuggled, and the parents paid for that smuggler to bring them across, or they're being trafficked, which is even worse, or parents in another country have rented out their child to someone else who wants to cross illegally, and they're hoping that that child will be a deportation shield. The other reason, which is really most common right now, although we have seen a huge spike in those other instances I just described, but what's happening most often now is that the Trump administration, seeing no end in sight to the continued influx of people from Central America who are coming here illegally, hoping to be released and live here indefinitely, is implementing a zero-tolerance policy where, under the law, people who enter illegally are charged with a crime, and when the parents who are choosing to come here illegally and choosing to bring their child on this dangerous journey and getting apprehended by the Border Patrol are getting prosecuted, the children cannot go to federal detention with them, so they are being put into protective custody in a system that's handled by the Office of Refugee Resettlement and cared for until their parents' criminal prosecution is dealt with. And then they can all be returned home together if the parent is not successful in being allowed to stay here. But this is initiated by the parents.
So in terms of where the children are, just to clarify, are they in some sort of government-funded daycare, or does the government, I've heard in some reports, find shirt-tail relatives who might be in the country and so forth to take care of them until the whole thing's adjudicated? Where do the kids actually spend that time?
Well, a lot of the anti-enforcement advocacy groups refer to these centers as federal prisons, but really what they are is shelters that are run by contractors who handle these kinds of situations on a regular basis. They're more like a group home or a dormitory where they attend classes, they can learn English, their health is checked, they get vaccinations, there are recreational opportunities, they go on field trips. It's akin to, you know, kind of the almost like a boarding school. And then if they have relatives in the country who can pass a basic screening and promise to watch out for the child and make sure that they are keeping in touch with immigration authorities, then they can be released.
So in terms of why we can't find them then, why is that? Where are these 1,500 kids?
Well, that's a good question, and this is really a fundamental problem with this entire system that was set up by the Obama administration when this problem started in 2012. Their priority was just to release the kids as quickly as possible because often they have been smuggled here by their parents who are already living here illegally, and they wanted to reunite them. Under the Obama administration, there was no follow-up being done. There were no background checks, no home studies, no making sure that the person was going to care for them appropriately and would not be abusing them. And then after some horrific incidents of kids who were being trafficked and kids who were turned over to gang members and kids who were being abused by the family member who came forward to sponsor them, they started this calling of the houses or of the homes where the kids were placed about 30 days after the placement, after the scandal. That was the, you know, what got HHS off of, you know, off of its position that they were not responsible for these kids. So they started calling them, and they found out that a lot of times the kids took off and ran away from their sponsor. Sometimes the sponsor is not interested in having any contact with the government because they fear deportation, or they're afraid the government is going to find out something about them that they don't want the government to know, or they just don't care because they are able to work here illegally, and, you know, the child is working, and they just don't, you know, see any reason to check in with the government. They accomplished their goal of getting here and being able to live here, so they just ignore the calls. But it is a problem. It has been, but it's only under the Trump administration, which actually increased the vetting and the home studies and the monitoring of these kids, that advocacy groups have started to complain, which seems to me to be for political purposes. They weren't complaining when the Obama administration was doing this in a much more irresponsible way, but they're complaining now because they want to score political points.
So most of them are not lost, the vast majority, it sounds like. They've just eluded the government, or the people sponsoring them have eluded the government, and so we can't find them.
Right, although I do think that's a big problem because they're not going to comply with the immigration due process that we've given them. They're not going to show up for their court hearings, and they're not, you know, if they're ordered removed back to their home country, they're not going to go along with that either. So I think it is a big problem that we don't know where they are. And then there is this worst case scenario where some of them are living with gang members or traffickers or in abusive situations. And I don't agree that the federal government has no responsibility for them. I think that when they fail to check in with the government should be taking more assertive action to find out what's happened to the kid and make sure that they're okay. And if they are okay and we're just ignoring it, then I think that's time to take the kid back into custody and say, look, you're not, and the sponsor, you're not complying with the rules here. You are disqualified now from trying to stay here, and you're going to be at the top of our list to be sent back home.
You mentioned gang members and traffickers. Are those cases of these people successfully lying to the government about who they are, and therefore they are given custody of these children, or is there some other reason they end up with them?
Well, quite honestly, all these years, they didn't even have to lie because the government didn't ask any questions. There are cases I know of MS-13 gang leaders recruiting kids to come up from El Salvador and Guatemala and Honduras because they knew they would go through this lenient process and that they could show up and claim to be a family member and quote-unquote sponsor this newly arrived minor, and that there would be no repercussions if they simply, you know, drifted back into the woodwork, that no one would come looking for the kid. And so that they found that to be a good way to boost their ranks here in the United States and make more money for the gang and to send back to El Salvador to the gang leaders there. It's not that all of these kids are members of gangs, but definitely when we have such a lenient policy like this, of releasing minors to anybody who shows up to claim them, then bad actors are going to take advantage of it, and they have done so, and it caused a lot of problems in communities like Long Island and the Washington, D.C. suburbs and Texas and other places where these gangs have suddenly become much more active and are causing a lot of problems, a lot of brutality and crimes that are occurring. ICE estimates that about 30% of the MS-13 gang members that they've arrested in the last year originally arrived here as minors in exactly this scenario.
I don't know if it's the way we think of minors in our minds or the way the media phrases things, but you get the idea that we're talking about kindergartners here, and we're not in at least a decent chunk of these cases, it seems.
Most of them claim to be 17. And, of course, they live here for a couple of years. Some of them arrived back in 2013, 2014. They're much older than that now, and they don't qualify for a green card or for any, you know, for asylum or anything like that. They're living here illegally, and it's frankly a big mess that needs to be cleaned up. And there are there were more than 100,000 unaccompanied minors who have been released in the last 4 or 5 years.
And as you just mentioned, a lot of them ending up being a major problem in various communities around the country. A lot to chew on here, but I'm sure we'll be discussing more of this soon as the debate continues. Jessica, very helpful information today. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Jessica Vaughn is Director of Policy Studies at the Center for Immigration Studies. I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America.